Mask mandates don't work.
No.
We mandate that the truth be told.
Let's do it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the second half of the Mind Medicine program in association with Mind Medicine Australia. I'm your host, Charles Coves, Australasia's passion provocateur. Our other co-host is Tanya de Jong, who's busy launching her musical called it's all about the story of her grandmother who invented the fold-out umbrella in the 1920s. Great story of rescue from Germany, from Nazi Germany, Jewish family. So she's busy doing that. I'm your host. You have to stick with me. So this show is all about how and why mind matters. And if you're listening carefully to those wonderful promos before I came back, there's a beautiful line there. Truth is like a lion. It will defend itself. Truth is like a lion. It will defend itself. And I totally agree with that. The truth always comes out. The question is, how long will it take to come out? So this show is about mental health issues, about health issues of all descriptions. And it's about the wonderful work of Mind Medicine Australia. So through this show, we want to promote its work. And I talked about in the first half of the program, what its focus is on promoting and authorizing the use of medicinal psilocybin and MDMA-assisted therapies to treat a range of mental illnesses in association with medicals, with doctors and medicos properly trained in delivering them. So you don't just go to a shop and buy this stuff. But unlike current treatments such as antidepressants, which only manage the illness and can have nasty side effects, psilocybin and MDMA-assisted therapies have been scientifically proven to be a safe and effective cure for people who have suffered for years from anxiety, depression, end-of-life stress, addiction, and post-traumatic stress disorder. On Mind Medicine's website, there are some amazing videos of people who've suffered for years, and then after 2 to 3 medicinal sessions, they have been cured. And there are 2 examples. One of an ambulance driver, they have been cured. And there are 2 examples. One of an ambulance driver in Israel who saw all these bodies blown up. For 10 years, he had suffered with PTSD. It was amazing the outcomes that have been achieved. And Mind Medicine Australia is dedicated to helping the rapidly emerging global movement to promote these medicines. It has also commenced the first ever certificate in psychedelic therapies in the Southern Hemisphere. There's a world-class faculty, which includes Dr. Gabor Mate, a Canadian, Professor David Nutt, and Dr. Rick Doblin, and it's training psychiatrists, GPs, physicians, other specialists, nurses, social workers, occupational therapists. It was recently described as the world's best psychedelic therapist training program in the world by Professor David Nutt, and graduates who have completed the program rave about it. Recently, Australia's TGA, the Therapeutic Goods Administration, has started granting approvals through the Special Access Scheme B for psilocybin and MDMA-assisted therapies for patients on a case-by-case basis. And there's serious consideration being given to downscheduling it from Schedule 9 banned to Schedule 8 controlled medicines. Over the last 3 years, Mind Medicine Australia has built awareness by presenting to governments, regulators, politicians, medical professionals. By the way, people, you would be amazed how many medical professionals are against better solutions for psychiatric and mental health problems. And MMA has been presenting to them and members of the public. We've provided free access, or it has provided free access, I'm a supporter of it, obviously, to leading researchers from around the world through a regular global webinar and podcast series, launched Australia's first book of psychedelic healing stories, organized a major international summit with leading researchers and other practitioners in this field from around the world, developed a leading therapist training course, which I've talked about, excuse me, an additional professional development programs, collaborated on the establishment of a Centre of Excellence in Psychedelic-Assisted Therapies at Monash University in Melbourne, the first one in Australia, successfully lobbied the federal government to provide $15 million of grants for psychedelic research, developed a campaign to have these medicines rescheduled, secured medicine supplies, and announced the largest psychedelic-assisted therapy trial in Australia. The recent pandemic has exacerbated Australia's mental health epidemic, and these treatments have the potential to cure millions of people who are suffering. So please check out his website, Mind Medicine Australia. Lead people you know who are suffering to take advantage of this wonderful new possibility. And me, as Australasia's passion provocateur, I say to you, the more passionate you are, the less mental health problems you will have. So that's why I'm here, because I want people to live a magnificent life. It's a great way to live life. Being passionate. I'm passionate. I'm passionate about this program, and I'm about to cough again. Coughing comes at the wrong time. So let me introduce my second guest, from a friend of mine on the World Council for Health. She's on the steering committee. I'm deeply involved with the World Council for Health. I'm delighted to welcome Jennifer Hibbard from Toronto, Canada, and it's 1 a.m. Saturday morning for Jennifer. Jennifer, welcome to the Mind Medicine program.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's a pleasure being here. Even though it's 1 a.m., that's okay.
You don't look
first thing in the morning.
Wow, that's well, I'm your first activity on a Saturday, on your Saturday, on your weekend. So it's great to have you here. Now, Jennifer, tell our audience all about you.
Okay. I'm in Canada, as you mentioned, and my professionally, I'm a dental surgeon specializing in pediatric care, and I'm also a lecturer, public speaker, editor, and clinician, and my specialty is pediatric care and treatment in the dental field. So I've been in private practice for many years, and let's skip forward to the COVID outbreak. Early in the outbreak, I actually had someone approach me at just around the time it was announced as an outbreak, and we had the whole big closure that happened all across the world. And they had, her mother had been in a nursing home, and they had had a scabies outbreak just before COVID, and they were treated with ivermectin. So she came and told me how successful it was for everybody in the nursing home while all the other nursing homes were getting decimated. And so we tried to reach out to media and the government, and we just got pushback. That's when I told her, just why don't you come over and I'll interview you and we'll put it on YouTube. So we did that, and it went viral because it was the first time anyone had spoken about ivermectin on social media. And even, I understand, Tom Barodi spoke to Sky News, telling them when he saw that video, it convinced him then, because the Monash study had just been published, and convinced him that he was most definitely going to study this. So needless to say, I got drawn into into a vortex. I had people contacting me from everywhere, and I ended up joining a group on Facebook called Ivermectin MD, and I probably had about 100 members at that time. So I got to know people all over the world. It was all healthcare workers and doctors around the world, and just trying to help people, and grew to about 10,000 members, and then it got deplatformed. No surprise. Because, you know, we didn't know at that point, and we were a little bit naive to the fact that ivermectin or some of these early treatments would not be acknowledged, unfortunately. So, I mean, there's no question when I got pushback that I couldn't get this story about ivermectin out, I knew there was something going wrong right away. Mm. So as time went on and we're all interacting, and I'm writing papers and started writing scientific papers with doctors and scientists around the world, and helping them with, you know, editing their papers and Peter McCullough contacted me and said, you must start a group in Canada. And because, of course, there wasn't a lot of us, right? So we're all really knew each other quite well. And thus the international network had been starting. And I guess a lot of people on Facebook, I was not a social media person before, but I've certainly got into it right into the deep end. So I actually came across a doctor in Canada that was prescribing ivermectin, and we were looking to try to help people with any kind of treatment that we could find that was effective, and ivermectin seemed to be, and there was a few others, hydroxychloroquine, etc. So once I found one doctor and I got introduced to an accountant, and together the three of us started the Canadian COVID Care Alliance, which is the Canadian version of the FLCCC. And so that took off really well. And of course, I got to know Tess through that year too. No, I actually got to know Tess early the next year.
So this is Tess Laurie.
Tess Laurie, early the next year, because she put that plea out to Prime Minister of England. And I spoke to her right after she did that. So we got to know each other, and I got involved with Bird, and we got involved in different conferences together around the world. I had already done at this point, I believe, a country study with two other scientists in Peru, and it showed ivermectin to be very effective. So I was presenting that paper, and it was. Now, Tess and I, earlier this year, in the end of September, we co-founded the World Council for Health, which
last year. In fact, I'll remind you, it was, I went to the first general meeting, which was in August.
I'm thinking September. Yeah, you're right. September, we did a soft launch earlier. You're right. Mm. I'm thinking earlier this year, and I'm back in 2021 still. So as I'm chronologically moving forward, yes, I'm skip forward. We're in 2022, of course. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much. In August, September, we started with the World Council for Health, and you were on board right away. And how did you get involved?
I was invited by Professor Ian Brighthope in the COVID Medical Network. And mm-hmm. then I got Mind Medicine Australia engaged as an affiliate. And so I represent it. And so I've been to almost every General Assembly meeting of the World Council for Health. Now, tell us, this is amazing. Tell us about the World Council for Health and its focus on health, and much more than just the pandemic.
Well, overall, the World Council for Health has been established to empower people by giving them what all of us consider common sense information, but is no longer common sense information. It's actually coveted information that's not that easy to access. So we want to help people take control of their own health and the health of their families. So we want to end this fear-based medicine and help everyone remember who they are. And so we've defined, our ethos of World Council is encapsulated. Also in our logo, you can see, no one else can see me right now, can they?
No, they can't. But describe the logo. I can see the logo, and it looks like a couple of lungs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a heart, and there's something that looks like a hand, but it could also be a branch, and there's a heart. So there's heart, lungs, and hand.
There you go. Okay. So you've described the picture of our logo. And basically it's a whole pink apple too, and the lung and a hand and a heart, like you described. The apple you could think of as representing good health and wholesomeness. And the lung is important for breathing. So in breath and an out breath of air. And that sort of shows how opposites exist and can work harmoniously together. The upright hand and heart represents standing up and taking responsibility for your health through love and community. And all together, it says there's a better way, and we are healthier together. And over this past several months, We are now in April. And so since August, we've put together a number of great documents, and we have a general assembly meeting every Monday where we have it live. And Charles, you could speak to that too. You've been speaking on it also. We bring scientists, doctors, lawyers, activists, different groups in to come and talk to us about what's going on in their part of the world. And it's really very stimulating because it's live and you're hearing from them, you know, in the same moment everywhere. And just like we're live right now.
And you never know. That's and you never know. You never know what's going to come out.
You never know what's going to come out. So, and we've got a number of committees and more growing, and, you know, we encourage people to join. And to certainly to go to worldcouncilforhealth.org to have a look at our website. And we do help countries also write up various like notices of liability. We're right now done an open letter on the WHO's pandemic treaty that a lot of people just don't know about. And it gives them an opportunity to learn what the WHO is. What is the constitution of the WHO? When did anyone last read the constitution of the WHO? You know, I mean, most people think the WHO is, you know, it's a site as far as when you look up anything of information, sourcing information, and you don't think of what their constitution is or really what is their power and what is their position interacting
and who is the World Health Organization answerable to?
Mm-hmm. Good question. So when you go into these sites, and we've picked up a lot of the different links that WHO is, because they've got all sorts of different committees. So, you know, we're trying to bring all that forward for people to learn about. So the open letter on the pandemic treaty really cites different aspects of their constitution, because they're planning on introducing a whole new.
I think Jennifer, I'm with Jennifer Hibbard, pediatric dentist from Toronto, who's also a co-founder of the World Council for Health. Jennifer, what is their game plan? What is the World Health Organization now trying to do to attack our freedoms?
Well, let me bring up what I was looking at here. I have something really good to talk about here.
Because I've been involved in understanding what it's planning to do. And I really want people to get a shock, because I'm shocked about what the World Health Organization is wanting to achieve. So have you got a nice, short, succinct statement that will help understand?
Let me see how I can explain this. Okay, because let me talk about this open letter that we put out, because it'll help people understand a little bit. And let me just have a look here. I just want to get the World Health Organization has 194 member states. It represents us at the United Nations and Global Health International Relations. There's different groups they have. I'm not really prepared to talk about this right off the bat with you. Hang on, let me get my papers together here.
Yeah, well, I think the essence of the game plan, just to make it simple, because I want to get
into your... Why don't you go there and I'll go into the discussion with you, because I've got a lot of breakdown here to talk to you about.
Yes, I don't want to go into so much detail. My picture, the view that I have formed, is what the World Health Organization wants to do is to have carte blanche to be able to declare a pandemic on its terms. Anything that it considers serious makes it a pandemic. And it wants 194 countries to concede power over health matters of their countries. So when the World Health Organization declares a pandemic, then all of Canada and Australia and each country's activities and actions are directed by the World Health Organization, and countries lose their sovereignty in making their own decisions in relation to the health of their own people. That's my message of urgent concern to people. And my question to you, Jennifer, is, am I expressing it adequately?
I think you're on the right track. And just recently, too, we came across some other information regarding the international health regulations. And we actually, when we were talking about the treaty, too, is they were planning on amending it and tightening it up. And we were looking at the dates that it looked like it was going to be August. It had been pushed forward to August, but now we see that there's an international health regulations, which would be voted on by the World Health Assembly scheduled for in May, May 22nd to 28th. And basically, in a nutshell, the key takeaways are the IHR are legally binding and supersede the United States Constitution. And all
Wow. Everybody, just get that. Apparently, these regulations are designed to override the U.S. Constitution.
And all the nations of the world have already agreed to the existing international health regulations, which kind of outlines all this. They've proposed amendments, U.S. has proposed amendments, to the legally binding IHR that would be voted upon in the next World Health Assembly, May 22nd and 28th, 2022. These proposed amendments will cede additional sovereignty, control, and legal authority over to the World Health Organization. They will not require approval, apparently, of two-thirds of the United States Senate. If they are approved, as submitted by the United States, by two-thirds of the member countries of the World Health Assembly, so 130 of 194 countries, the amendments would enter into force as international law just 6 months later. It's not known if they'll be voted upon individually or as a complete package for the amendments. The amendments will give the Director General of the WHO the power to unilaterally declare a public health emergency of international concern, even over the objection of the country dealing with an outbreak of disease. According to changes made to the US regulations that were published apparently one day before Donald Trump was inaugurated, the definition of public health emergency in the United States now include the declaration of the public health emergency of international concern by the WHO. A unilateral declaration of the, and I'll get the whole thing right, public health emergency of international concern by the WHO will enable the declaration of a public health emergency by the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services. The amendment proposed by the United States would also give the Director General of the WHO the legal authority to unilaterally issue an intermediate public health alert. The criteria for the issuance of this is simply that the Director General has determined it requires a heightened international awareness and a potential international public health response. The amendments will also give regional directors within the WHO the legal authority to declare a public health emergency of regional concern. So yes, it appears.
Jennifer, you've told us enough horror stories. Jennifer Hibbert from Toronto, also on the steering committee of the World Council for Health. This, everybody, is a great danger to your lives, to your freedom, to the way that Australia, Canada, and wherever you live, how that is run, to have this alleged power given to this bureaucrat who I have no sense. I suggest to you people, do not trust the World Health Organization, because I say with confidence that it is not to be trusted. I say there is grave concern that it has been corrupted, its decision making has been corrupted, and this impacts on your health. And this show is about health. And Jennifer, I'm going to unpack after we come back from a break. You know, you made this comment, health through love and community. And you are in the health industry. So I want to understand how you became a dental surgeon, because I love all dental surgeons. Julie, my wife, and I have a business, Julie Parker Dental Practice Management, and we deal with a lot of dentists around the world. and dental surgeons do wonderful stuff, and pediatric dentists, a very interesting space to be in. So your behavior, Jennifer, with a child is going to determine their whole subconscious response to dentists. So I look forward to health taught through love and community. And why did you choose to spend your life looking into kids' mouths? I'm with Jennifer Hibbert. I'm Charles Cobes, Mind Medicine Program. We will be back in a few minutes.
Politically incorrect on TNT Radio.
The politicians don't know what's in these press releases, but they're written by underlings. They're written by people who are employed to write them. And half the time, the politicians don't even know they're being released. So the young journalists get hold of them. They say, I've got nothing else to do. I'll put this to air, or I put this to print. They go on air and talk it down, or the editor tells them this is what they've got to say. Half the time, they can't say it properly anyway because they can't speak the language.
Well,
or they string words together with a whole lot of other things that are meaningless in between the words.
What you've just told me there is very disappointing. You know, it's sad that we can't have quality debate, quality information, and talk to people from divergent opinion points, because that's what makes us aware or allows us to make a considered decision. And I think this ties right back into the national panic attack that's been served up to the nation.
Politically Incorrect with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
I was drawn to the Navy by my sense of adventure. I'm a writer, so if it's the crew's job to look after the ship, then it's my job to look after the crew. It's pretty amazing. Being in charge of pay and allowances is really important, and I love it because they're incredible people. And helping them with personal matters, you really see the positive effect of what you do. There's nothing more rewarding than that. I was born in Beckenham, but I was made in the Royal Navy. Start your journey. Search Made in the Royal Navy.
Carbon monoxide is a colorless, odorless gas that can be fatal. Don't use anything indoors that burns fuel, such as gasoline-powered generators, camp stoves and lanterns, or charcoal grills. Opening doors and windows or using fans isn't enough. Have your vents and chimneys checked to make sure water heater and gas furnace exhausts aren't blocked. If you feel sick, dizzy, or weak while using a generator, get to fresh air right away. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNTRadio.live.
Welcome back to the Mind Medicine Program. I'm Charles Cobes, your host from Melbourne, Australia. I'm Australasia's passion provocateur. My guest in the second half of the program is Jennifer Hibbard, a pediatric dentist, dental surgeon from Toronto, Canada, who's doing a great job because it's 1:30 a.m. Saturday morning for Jennifer, and we're live. So you're doing a great job, Jennifer. Now, two questions, but first one, you mentioned that the World Council for Health, its mantra is health through love and community. Can you just get some words around how people can interpret that? Because I love that idea, you know, that if you're in a loving environment, this has a big impact on your health. So please, why did World Council adopt that mantra?
Well, you know, it's really a new way forward, and that's what we keep talking about, is we're going to find a better way and a new way forward. And a better way is with a big sense of community, and everybody works together and helps each other. And with absolutely, there is no other way than opening your heart with love to help each other. And as a healthcare worker, that's all I know in life anyway, is you do your best to help others. And there's no accident that we're here talking, and that we're both part of the World Council, and that we've been doing our best to try and help people, whatever it is that they need help with. You will reach out, and if you can't provide the help yourself because it's not your wheelhouse, you communicate with other healthcare workers or other specialists or anybody that you, I mean, when you're in a field that you actually are dependent on to help improve people's health. I'm segueing a little bit now into what I do. When you're in a field, whether you're a physician, a dentist, a chiropractor, any field of health or even in mind health that, you know, when you're a psychologist or you're doing shows like you're doing too, where you're reaching out and you're trying to, through people's hearts, get to their mind. Certainly choosing to work in those fields, you spend your whole life trying to help and be available for people because that's what gives you satisfaction. It's definitely a two-way street. Mm. But, you know, in different fields, people respond to different stimuli, right? So we're seeing that absolutely right now during this pandemic. And maybe that's why our eyes are open to various things going on that are just not obvious to other people because they operate in a different sphere and in a different way in their life. And they're motivated by different things.
Yes, that's certainly true. So many people are motivated through fear of loss of money or through fear, and therefore their whole lives are dedicated to money. So how did it happen that you chose to be a dental surgeon and spend your life looking down people's throats?
Oh, that sounds lovely. my parents are both, we're both academic and in a healthcare field, and have a lot of siblings. So a number of my brothers. So, you know, academics and education was certainly came quite naturally in our family. We were very lucky to have that opportunity, and I feel very blessed every day for that opportunity. And with my siblings ahead of me, I had one brother was in medicine, another brother was in law, another brother was in dentistry. Then I came next. I was number four out of eight children. Mm. So,
by the way, my previous guest, Professor Christopher Neal, he has eight children. So there you are. You are one of eight children. Wow.
All right. That's great. So, I knew you learn your direction when you're going through school, and it's what you gravitate to. It's, you know, it's when you like a subject, you always excel in it. And when you don't like something, even if you get good marks, you struggle because you don't really want to study that subject. You don't really want to, you know, you're just spitting it back in an exam. But when you're, you know, when I knew I was gravitating very strongly towards sciences, I found it really interesting and fascinating. And I spent my early years in my undergrad university just deciding what I wanted. I was taking different research courses, pre-med courses in various fields, even philosophy, but I did know that I was science oriented. And really, I looked at dentistry as just a great profession for me. I knew I wanted to have a family and wanted to be able to have flexibility and control of my time. That's what I thought, of course. Things don't quite turn out the way you think. So by the time I started having a family, I had this huge practice and, you know, I was very much attached to the practice and juggling, trying to figure out how to juggle the family, but it all fell into place very nicely, like it always does when you let it. As far as choosing pediatrics, going through dental school, I enjoyed all the different fields. I went down to New York City to Albert Einstein for a two-year residency program. And the residency program was a fabulous pediatric residency program. And my director of the program was a phenomenal person, Harold Diner. He's now passed away. But he was my mentor. He was an amazing person. And really, that just sealed the deal for me. And I came back to Toronto and started a practice and continued teaching and doing all sorts of other things because you just do when you're like that. I'm a multitasker. I like keeping busy. I've got, you know, umpteen projects on the go all the time. And it just makes me feel very alive.
So I have no sense. I mean, two things I want to say always amuses me. When I went to Melbourne University, and I think we should disclose to people that whilst you are in Toronto, you were born in Australia. Your family was an Australian family, wasn't it?
Yeah, from Melbourne.
Okay. And then, so did you get stolen by a Canadian lover? Or what? How did it happen that you ended up in Canada?
No. Actually, when I was 10 years old, my family moved to Toronto. And so just, you know, back then, you know, a lot of headhunting went, right, went on for different, I guess it does now too, but people move around a little bit differently. They don't actually pick their whole family up and move, because certainly we were, you know, living a nice life in Melbourne, Australia too. So,
yeah,
and, you know, okay. be careful what you wish for. I remember as a child watching those movies at Christmas with the snow and thinking, oh, wow, I would really love to see what snow looks like and be in snow for Christmas. And voila, here I am.
years of freezing. By the way,
I have
an invitation to speak at a conference on hemp in November this year in Saskatchewan. And I'm told Saskatchewan in the end of November is not a very lovely place to be in weather terms. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty cold there.
I'll have to choose the virtual option. Now, coming back to unfairness of university programs, I remember at Melbourne University in my law degree, I finished it in 1973, my law degree, so it was a long time ago, but we had eight hours of lectures a week, and I remember the dental students had 35 hours of lectures and prac sessions a week. So we had eight.
Yeah.
I learned
that
to play.
That was it?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? That's amazing. Well, what do they put you on? Do you go out and do projects?
No. The theory was that they'd give you reading. So you had to prepare 3 hours for each. You had to do 3 hours of pre-reading for each hour of lecture. But, of course, no one ever did. And so, we played golf, got drunk, played football. So that was so wonderfully unfair. Now, the second thing, I am a dental surgeon's or a dentist's dream patient. I have a mouthful of mercury. So all through the 60s, Jennifer, and everyone, I'm with Jennifer Hibbert, a pediatric dental surgeon from Canada but born in Melbourne, Australia. My mouth is full of mercury and I'm very stable. I'm very happy with my teeth, but lots of mercury there. So my parents paid a lot of money to dental surgeons. So, and having gone through that as a kid, I have no real perception of what pediatric dentistry is about. And Julie consults to a couple of practices that do that sort of stuff. So give us a sense of what's the difference between pediatric dentistry and we adults.
General dentistry. Well, yeah. General dentistry, it's you're a jack of all. You do a little bit of everything, but you won't take on the complicated cases. And that's when you end up with all these different specialties. You've got oral surgery. They take out wisdom teeth, take out teeth, but so does a general dentist. But when it gets complicated, they're going to send them off to an oral surgeon. And then oral surgeon also handles broken jaw and different head and neck issues, cancer cases. I mean, they can get quite heavy and complicated and interesting. And then you have, for instance, if you needed a root canal on your tooth, I'm sure, unfortunately, a lot of people are probably familiar with what a root canal is. And a general dentist will do root canal, but if it looks complicated or there's just something, or they might have done a root canal and the patient's still symptomatic. So you want to trot off to an endodontist and get the endodontist. And they have such phenomenal equipment now. They do everything under microscope and the treatment is pretty much, it really is pain-free and they do amazing work. So that's what they do. And, you know, you move on and on to all the different specialists, periodontists, and you've got the pediatric dentist where it lands in my neck of the woods. And pediatric dentistry is a specialty for children. And definitely I get all the complicated cases regarding dental problems, issues, rampant decay, and behavioral. And the behavioral is a big part of it. So whether the child is good or not good, it is still like you said, a huge impact on their life. And you are going to introduce them to fear-based dentistry, or knowing that there's always someone out there that will make them feel safe and secure, and they will put themselves in their hands for care. And that's what my intention is, and that is really what the field of pediatric dentistry should be doing for people. And then also, if pediatric dental office can look, it can look like a general dental's office, general dentist's office, but when I'd have people come in, they'd say, you know, I came in here and I thought, you know, what's the difference? Yes, it's a lovely looking office. It's warm. It's maybe, you know, you're picking up energy that's a little different, but they're not, they think, so what's the big deal? By the time they finish a session in there and they say, wow, now I know the difference. This is really different than being in a general dentist's office. Very different. And it's really the engagement too, I think. And it's always was very important for me. It's always been very important for me to train the staff really well and teach them. I mean, this is true in any business, but teach them to be careful every word you say and how you say it, because what comes out of your mouth is as if it all came out of my mouth. And our intention here is to make people feel comfortable, and you never pass judgment. Because this is something too that a lot of the young new graduates, and they'll say, oh, can you believe, look at this sort of case, or how could this happen, and how could this mother do this, or, you know, and the parents come in feeling awful too, because they've got a situation with their children. And as a parent, you know, you've got a child too.
I've got five children.
That's right. You've got five. That's awesome. Thank you. You got five. Thanks for telling, reminding me. So if anything's going on, anything goes off a little bit, you feel guilty and you think, what could I have done differently to prevent this? Right. So never pass judgment, because life gets in the way and everybody's intention is always really good. And we're all learning every day how to deal with things. And, you know, we all learn the best the hard way, right? So you know, my job is to help the parents through this and make them feel like, hey, you're here. You couldn't do anything better for your child than to bring them in to an environment where we're going to turn this around. So, yeah, no, I really enjoy interacting with the people. It's really
one of the observations I've made of myself in the time that Julie and I have been together, so I've got a whole new perception about dentistry, I remember thinking, gosh, I pictured my teeth as literally being clumps of granite or concrete in my teeth, you know, despite the pain that we have. And I thought, gosh, where did that belief system come from? And I just make the observation that finding out where people are, that, as you say, treat each family that comes in and you go, hey, what do you believe about your teeth? And asking that question, it could be very interesting. And if you recorded that, what do you believe about teeth? You would get some very interesting responses, I would imagine.
Well, you know what? Dentistry really should be a subspecialty of medicine, because, as you said, you consider your teeth as just kind of there. It's people, I really look at their teeth as something like an object. You could take them out, fix them, put them back in. They're just an object that's attached to your body that has a function. But your teeth are alive. And when you get damage to your teeth, it affects your whole body. And when it gets into, you've got decay, it affects the surface of your teeth, which affects your whole environment. It's all connected and communicating. You've got blood vessels that run in through the inside of your teeth, from the bone inside the teeth. You've got into your gums too. It's all connected. You get an infection in your mouth. I've had children where I've been called in after they've gone through series of examinations and x-rays because they think that they've got some kind of leukemia. And I look in their mouth and they've got a dental problem and they've got dental abscessing. But I've also seen dental abscesses that have gone to the brain and caused a brain abscess. So dental infection can spread and it can cause major health problems. And I'm sure people listening know about the talk about healthy gums, because if you don't keep your gums healthy and your teeth, but you can end up having heart problems. But I also tell people, consider your teeth. Oh, and this is a perfect line I always hear from parents, and I can't blame them at all. And they say, why would you fix baby teeth too? Because, you know, when they're really small, they're coming in and they're within their baby teeth. And I'll say to them, well, I said, tell me, you've got a mouthful of teeth. Do you have, and they'll say, oh, because I never had anything done to my teeth when I had baby teeth. So I'll say to them, so do you have fillings in your mouth? Oh, I got a mouthful of fillings. And I'll say, well, that's why you're here with your child, because if we keep their mouth, your little one's mouth healthy, if we get it healthy again, and I can show you very easily how to keep your child's teeth and mouth healthy, it creates a healthy environment for the teeth to develop, for the permanent teeth to develop. The bone will stay healthy. The oral environment's healthy. So as the new teeth grow in, they grow into a healthy environment. You're very likely going to have a child that has no decay on their permanent teeth, because diet and all of these factors come into it, because I do diet counseling. We talk about allergens. We talk about all sorts of things that is very easy to identify. And actually, the teeth reflect your health in your body. People that have major health issues, very often we can see it in the teeth. It's almost like looking at, if a tree is cut and you can see the rings in a tree, you can see that the years where the tree has lacked nutrients, and you can see the years where it's had a lot of nutrients because it has a lot of growth and there's space between the rings. You can see that on the teeth. You can see different hypoplasia. You can see different kind of issues on the teeth that children and adults have. I can see it when an adult smiles at me. I can often see what's going on to some degree medically, and not everything, but it is a huge part of your health and your body. And if your teeth aren't healthy, think about it. It's the entrance into the domain of your body. And if you're seeing, because inside your body, think about how so many people eat fast food, you know, it's full of all sorts of chemicals, and somehow they process it, they eat it, and they think they're fine. But then as years go by, they get all issues with various organs, weight, all sorts of things. When you look at your teeth, you can see your teeth. You can't see your liver, your kidney, your intestines, but you can see your teeth. When you see that you've got decay in your teeth, you have an imbalance in your body. Your imbalance is in going to throw off your immune system. You definitely have a diet imbalance, because if your teeth are decaying, there's something wrong with the diet. Whether it is that the little child's going to bed with a bottle and falling asleep with a bottle in their mouth, what's in the bottle? You can put water in it, it's okay. But even milk's got sugar in it. You're going to get decay if you leave your child in bed drinking milk and falling asleep like that. Definitely juices.
Jennifer,
normal diet. Okay, I've talked enough about diet.
That's beautiful. So that two, the big things that I got out of that, many people look on teeth just as an object. You've really painted this beautiful picture of how different that is. It's a part of your body that you can see, and everything comes through it. So everybody, please take note of this. Now, what about the stress that you are under? Because I really want, before, you know, we've only got a few more minutes before you can go back to bed, and then I hear you've got another 6 a.m. conversation with someone else. We'll leave that for that. But how do you handle the stresses and all the projects that you've got? What are the strategies that you use that people could learn from?
Well, I'm learning as I'm going forward, because this is a whole new territory for all of us. But by nature, I thrive on positive stress. So I thrive on organized if I said organized chaos, you'd get the wrong image. But I like being really busy. I'm the kind of person that reads 10 books at the same time. Doesn't mean I'm holding 10 books, but you know, it depends on my mood as to which book I feel like reading. I like to be occupied and have things planned to do. So how do I cope with the stress? You just have to read the signals. And, you know, in our international community now, where I know everybody, including all our listeners, because everybody's connected that much more internationally, you reach out and touch somebody and connect with them. Now, that's a big thing to say now with COVID when we've had so much isolation. And I have to say, no matter what side you are on of the narrative, it's very interesting how all of us have isolated ourselves physically to some degree. We still mix with our friends, etc., but it's different. It is different. But I do know that I'm, you know, you reach into your heart a lot more. I try to shift into my heart space a lot more. I have been through my whole life very intuitive, but I've spent a lot of my life in my head. And I mean that as far as when you're an academic too, you're in the headspace and thinking intellectually a lot. And I certainly am learning through this COVID period to shift into my heart space. And when you realize that, you know, when it comes down to those last hours, when your number's up, actually your heart is the last organ. You are alive until your heart is no longer working. Every other organ shuts down before your heart. So, for instance, when you have people who are in a coma or they're brain dead, but their heart is still there, they're alive, right? So actually, your heart is what is the organ of dominance in your body, not your brain. And going through what we're going through right now, all of us together internationally with this COVID pandemic, I'm learning all of this to shift into the heart space. And I have to say that I'm learning more about meditations. Going out for a walk feels really good, connecting with nature and reaching out to like-minded people. It doesn't matter what you believe or don't believe, but reach out to like-minded people to help you feel that you are still on the right track.
Yes, it has been one of the wonderful benefits of outrageous government overreach, which is what I call it. I call the attack on our freedom outrageous. I look on what's happening in Canada with Justin Trudeau. I consider that outrageous and contrary to Canada's constitution. I talk about what Australian government is doing is contrary to our constitution. And I say that advisedly because I've got an honours degree in law, I've got a master's degree in law, I practiced law for 20 years. I've been a legal strategist for the last 10 years. It is outrageous. However, every experience has both good and bad benefits and drawbacks. And as you were saying that, Jennifer, have a look at the people that we've all met through these online. Now, they're not quite, you know, like it's, but I've met an amazing number of people through this, and I'm grateful because I've got a whole new global network, and you know I'm not willing to take experimental jabs into my body, although my children, you know, I'm not anti-vax, but I am pro freedom of choice, and absolutely, it's going to be wonderful coming to Toronto to visit people and other people in Ottawa that I didn't know before all this. So it's a wonderful benefit, isn't it?
It is. It's been really. It really has turned into a global village, and we're part of it. And I feel really lucky to have met you and everybody else that's come into my life during this time period. And it has been keeping it keeps us all feeling good when we interact together, because I think we're all focusing on trying to keep things as positive as we can, certainly amongst ourselves. Because it's a very difficult time, really difficult.
It is. Well, Jennifer Hibbard, pediatric dental surgeon is your official category, but you are actually a woman. A woman deeply concerned about the health of the planet, about health of people, coming from a space of love. Thank you for joining us on Mind, on the Mind Medicine Program in association with Mind Medicine Australia. I'm Charles Coves, your host, co-host with Tanya de Jong, who won't be here on the program till about June. But your health, coming from your heart space, crucial element to your health. And I urge all of you to have this beautiful balance between mental and physical and spiritual. And one of the fastest ways to get into your heart space is through gratitude. I'm grateful that you joined us, Jennifer. Thanks for listening. See you in a couple of weeks' time.
Thank you very much, Charles.